everybody. Welcome back to the campsite. This is your Wolverine Patrol reporting for duty. I'm Tim. As always, I'm here with my co-hosts Jack and John and our producer Ron. Here to hang out. Episode 4. We are, well, I guess really episode 5 if you include the Kamala one. But yeah, here we are, ready for another exciting patrol meeting, baby. You know, we've been talking a lot about, like, you know, policy and, like, the really heavy kind of politics stuff the last 3 episodes. And today, we kind of wanted to take, I mean, it's still going to have a political bent, obviously, and, like, relate to politics, but we kind of wanted to branch out from, like, just the election, just, you know, current happenings or whatever, and kind of talk more, like, philosophically about, like, how politics influences other parts of our lives, particularly, like, the media and, like, the way we interact with media in this country is kind of broadly our topic. So we're going to kick it off here to our most reserved member of the troop, of the patrol.
Who, I'm flattered that you think that.
Yeah, he frequently only speaks when he truly has something to say. He doesn't babble forever like maybe some of the other... fatter, more bearded members of the patrol do.
Quick question. In post, should I add, like, campfire and nature sound effects to make it sound like we're sitting around a campfire?
Yes, but as you doing this part, put in, like, some... like, very faint in the background.
Yeah. That would be very funny. But yeah, that's kind of our point today. So, John, if you want to kind of start with your kind of bit and your kind of thesis on some things today... We're starting off talking about something that there's a lot of discourse around on the internet, and that is adult Harry Potter fans and other fandom types who like to compare modern politics in its entirety constantly to children's media. So, John, if you want to take it away.
Yeah, so how I kind of got on this line of thinking was when I was finishing up my major. I am a classical civilization major. If you're not familiar with that means, it basically just means, like, I studied a lot of ancient history, particularly around the Mediterranean area, Middle East. So it's focusing on history, language, culture. So that's the basis of what that
is. It's quite broad in a cool way.
So basically meaning there's no way in hell I was actually getting a job in that. Now I work in the financial sector. Anyway.
Dudes rock, baby.
Yep. So, so that's where my background was. And kind of how I got this line of thinking started was on when I was trying to decide on a capstone project. I wanted to kind of show how, you know, multiple media examples, you know, we're talking movies, video games, books, TV shows, you know, comic books, everything. Really, in these fictional worlds that each of these authors and creators is making, that even at the most minute details that, you know, somebody might just barely catch, everything's very heavily influenced by real-world cultures, you know, and historical events, actual politics. That's kind of where I was getting into that here. So when you look at these different shows, and I'll just say shows, the media examples, you have, you know, politics incorporated into them in one shape or the other. This, of course, is being propaganda. I'm totally cool with propaganda when it's, you know, coming from a kind of a righteous, just, peaceful stance, or not necessarily peaceful, but, you know.
Absolutely.
And a lot of examples.
None of us, listen, everything is political on some level. I think even an absence of politics could be argued as politics. I know we could have that argument all day as all aren't political. But I think that, like, there is a political bent to a lot of things, and everything's trying to get you to believe something, right? That is the point of, like, expression.
Yes.
On some level, you know, in anything, if I talk to somebody, I'm trying to get them to believe I'm this person or whatever on the most basic level. So the idea that, like, propaganda is inherently a dirty word, or, like, even something you're absolutely immune to or something you can completely detach from is absurd. I agree with that. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, totally cool with that. So, you know, I'm going to, you know, bring up some of the most iconic examples of this. You're going to see Star Wars, and that's in recent history, you know, something spanning back the last 40 years. Main conflicts being between the Rebel Alliance and the Empire. So the Empire is clearly fascist. The message of the entire series is anti-fascism, and, but it's also a little bit capitalistic.
That's a thesis,
because, you know, George Lucas just wanted to make money. Off of making children's toys.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Anyway, he slapped that message in there too, so I guess he's not believing in the failing capitalism structure. I think, you know, a lot of people can misconstrue that too. You know, they're not getting that the example is clearly anti-fascism, especially like within Star Wars. And they're like, oh, hey, I like the Empire. They're cool. They're rebel suck. I like Darth Vader. I like Emperor Palpatine.
Yeah, they made the fascists a little too fashionable and a little too cool at times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which, for entertainment value, you get, but if you're trying to make a big political message, can get a little murky for sure.
So maybe that wasn't necessarily the point. But anyway, you have people that are, you know, kind of falling towards the wrong side of things there. So one thing that I've seen a lot of lately was in the 2016 election, particularly, was the comparisons between Trump and Clinton being likened to Voldemort and Umbridge from Harry Potter. Right. And let's be honest, I think we've all been guilty of, you know, sharing the memes and that, this and that, and, you know, I've done this too. But it's...
Yeah, I was about to say, speak for yourself, but yeah, okay. We can accept this thesis.
Hang on. I just mean, like, the memes and stuff about it.
Sure.
I've made it to 30 without reading a single Harry Potter book or seeing a single one of the movies.
Ah, boo.
Yeah.
Captain No Fun.
Yeah. I think, you know, obviously I've learned that this is not a good thing. Basically, what this does in this particular example is you have, you know, a message of, you know, good and evil, and, you know, maybe with Harry Potter less so than like Star Wars or Avatar The Last Airbender or something like that, Hunger Games.
Sure.
Messages of being against fascism, but these are the characters that, you know, adult nerds have latched onto, so they like, oh, hey, look, Voldemort is Trump and Hillary is Umbridge, and is that really bad? And I think we're having an election between these two villains. It's like, okay, you know, you're taking the message, I think, a little bit, but now you're just kind of putting it back through Google Translate on itself, and you're really trivializing a lot of the different things because you're not looking at the issues.
Right, it's the most surface-level comparison.
Right, exactly, and that's basically your entire understanding of politics.
Right.
So it would be cool if you took that and you kind of delved into it a little bit and expanded your understanding of where these issues are coming from, but I think you're just staying on that surface a little bit too much.
I find Harry Potter comparisons particularly interesting because if you actually look back on Harry Potter as like a big anti-fascist thing, the thing that always kind of catches me at the end is like, the thing that's not really talked about, especially like as the books wrap up, is like, the minute Voldemort took control, the entire Ministry of Magic was just like, yep, he's in charge now, cool, it's fine. Yep, we're just going to support fascism, it's good. But then, like, they defeat the fascism, but, like, nothing changes. Harry and all them just go work for the same Ministry of Magic that let Voldemort... So I always find it kind of weird that they were like, we need to be like Harry Potter, we need to do this. And I'm like, you mean we need to just, like, beat one existential threat and not think about the fact that, like, everybody enabled this threat at every point?
Absolutely. Well, and I think that... especially the Hunger Games. I'm glad that you brought up the Hunger Games because that one in particular sticks out to me as like these things function in capitalist society as a release valve for revolutionary energy and revolutionary thoughts.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. People get to read these books and watch these movies and see the fascists get defeated in relatively short order. You know, our heroes are in peril for a little bit there, but everything kind of turns out okay, and we all pull through, and the fascists are defeated, and it's good at the end, right? And I think that young people under capitalism feel so powerless day-to-day to affect any real change.
Absolutely.
Because we're all so alienated that we look to these media that...
It's because you'd be on that damn phone.
It's because you... Right. Yeah, people didn't read newspapers in public before. They just talked with one another.
Have you seen that picture of, like, it's like a subway, and literally every single person has a paper in front of them?
Yeah.
And they're like, this technology is making us all so isolated. So it's like, yeah, fuck off.
Absolutely.
You know? But it's like the kids are really not all right. Yeah. And they are looking for... change that they know is not going to come. So instead of actually getting out in the streets and trying to affect change, all they feel like they can do is be like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, they were the villain in this book? Because that would mean at the end they're gonna lose.
Right. And I think that's actually an excellent segue with, you know, what John said, because like you know, I think something that really stuck out to me there was when you said it's like they've run the message through Google Translate. But what I think Google Translate actually is in that metaphor is capitalism and marketing and, you know, the entertainment industry at large and the people who have a vested interest in a material status quo. That's the fucking Google Translate that causes everything to be such a surface-level comparison.
Yep.
And I think that's the broader point here. Not to, like, say you're fucking stupid if you ever compare modern politics to, like, any media. Even Harry Potter or whatever. But, like, if it's just this, like, we need to fight Voldemort because he's bad and we're good. And it's, like, that's the extent of your cultural analysis. It's just going to exist to keep people goofy and complacent and not really analyzing anything and simplifying this entire complicated, fucked up thing with a whole lot of people acting in bad faith in a way that's just, it's glib and ridiculous.
And it distracts from any sort of class conscious discussion of any on any level.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
My God, you want to talk about Exhibit A on that in the last couple of years, the Joker movie that Todd Phillips did. It was probably the most explicitly, like, anti-ruling class mainstream film I've seen in a while. The most, like, on the nose in that sense. And the moral panic that liberals threw up around that was, like, seriously, like, surprising to me. Like, I didn't know, I expected them to be like, no, you know, whatever, bad. But the fact that they were freaking the fuck out, like, Nazis are gonna come and shoot fucking theaters up over this movie, was, like, really telling. Like, talk about telling on yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm. I took a first date to go see that movie, and there was no second date, which I didn't have to tell you. but we went, and it was packed. It was opening night, and we go to see it. And, you know, full theater, the movie's going, it's great. And I think probably with about really only a few minutes left in the movie, two Chicago police officers came in the back. And they didn't do it. They just stood there, keeping an eye out. But the whole time I was kind of like, okay, everything was going fine. Now you guys are making us uncomfortable.
Right.
Can you just, like, nothing's going on in here. Yeah. Can you please just, like,
go in the fucking hallway?
Yeah, just, like, yeah, come on.
Right. Yeah, Jesus Christ. Do you want to continue, John? I'm not sure where you were in your point.
No, I was actually done with that.
Awesome.
Yeah, I just wanted you guys to jump in with your thoughts, and I think you guys both brought in something really good to that. That, Tim, where you're saying that the Google Translate in this example isn't just, like, literally somebody's typing a message in and it's getting turned around and, you know, translated for somebody else to understand it, but then it keeps going back and forth. But then you're adding that lens on top of it,
yeah,
with Hollywood and the media. And,
right.
You know, they're filtering out the important parts of that, too, when it's, you know,
right,
having merchandise. And,
right. Marketability.
Marketability with it, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're putting a veneer and a lens over it that is not being done by people in particularly great faith in many cases. And I mean, I'm not going to blame any one individual for, like, oh, you're marketing it this way, or you're muting certain things because, you know, you can't challenge status quo too much if you want funding. Like, I'm not blaming any one individual for that, but, like, yeah, I think it's fair to say that, like, the entertainment industry in this country as a wing of politics is pretty reactionary. And that lens that's going to be put over media is just not always going to be done in very good faith.
Well, and I think it's important to understand that the vested interest of all the people who work in Hollywood in continuing to make boco loads of money, it kind of makes them, like, these cynical, like, purveyors of whatever the cultural zeitgeist is at the moment, right?
Right.
And, like, currently everybody is so absolutely terrified of what's going on in politics, and they're so absolutely just shit the bed scared of what's going to happen in the next, like, 20 to 30 years because of climate change, and as, you know, the crises of capitalism continue to come to a head.
Right.
People generally have an understanding that that is happening and that that is going to continue to happen.
Yeah.
And that, I think, accounts for the rise in all these superhero movies.
Oh, God,
that everybody wants to go and see 4 or 5 Marvel films a year because we all are looking for some hero to come and swoop down out of the sky and save us from how fucked up the world is, right? And that's why this, like, these movies are so just
outrageously
successful.
They're, like, the biggest cultural phenomenon in film for the last 15, 20 years now.
Yeah.
Probably. And, I mean, yeah, it's so funny that, like, that really is like the thing we've clung to in these times. The superhero movies have kind of always been a thing, back to like Christopher Reeve and stuff, but like, you know,
but like one every couple years,
right?
You know, yeah. Like not.
It was a very special thing. Oh my God, there's a Batman movie coming out.
Like, yeah, that's crazy. Well, you know, it's funny because I watched a thing this morning. It was a history of a theme park in Florida that was called Six Guns, which was like a Wild West theme park, like a big one back in like the 60s and 70s. And like the reason they really eventually failed in the end is because kind of the cultural zeitgeist of the Wild West kind of died out as we kind of came into the modern world. So I just think it's funny that you talk about like cultural trends of like the middle part of the century. It was all about like the Wild West and like unfettered capitalism, where we're going to build the new world in our image, you know, as a country and as our state project. So like, yeah, the cowboy and like the ruffian kind of guy making it on his own was like the thing. And now in the next century, you're right, we want somebody to swoop in from the sky and save us.
Yeah. Well, and like even talking about like the cowboy movies back then, that was really big in like the 50s and 60s when people felt like they were kind of fully coming under the grip of this new like multinational capitalism, and they felt their personal freedoms slipping away slowly under that regime. And so they wanted to look back and be able to say, even though I don't personally feel like I'm as free as I want to be, the current cultural situation is the result of these upstanding figures of just total personal liberation and freedom.
Right.
And that's how we got from point A to where we are
now. So it wasn't so maybe I'm wrong then, and maybe that is actually the point, is that it wasn't so much an embodiment of like how people were feeling at that time.
It was
as like as a reaction.
Yeah.
So people weren't feeling like the cowboy, so that's why they clung to them. Where I was thinking, oh, it's the post-world, brave new world, so we're going to go out and be the cowboys of the world. But I think actually what it probably really was, you're right, is people felt like they were being put in a box now.
Yeah. And now, if I can bring this perspective in,
sure.
As a comedian, comedy in the age of Trump is so fucking pointless.
And bad.
The fiction has met the reality.
Yeah.
You cannot satirize this man because he does it himself.
Right.
Every single time he opens his fucking mouth on television.
Right.
But, and it's this whole weird, and it draws me back to this Kurt Vonnegut quote, which I feel is pretty relevant to this, and I pull it out a lot. Kurt Vonnegut said, during the Vietnam War, felt like every single artist with a rational head on their shoulders had a laser beam pointed directly at the U.S. government.
Yeah.
Against the Vietnam War. And he's like, the effect of all that was essentially the same of dropping a custard pie on somebody's face from a stepladder.
Mm-hmm.
Which just does nothing.
Yeah.
So it's this whole thing of, look, if this is you expressing yourself and this helps you cope and deal, great. Do whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But don't sit here and act like your hot Trump takes are actually doing anything. And this is the bigger point that I'd love to hear you guys talk about this. They legitimately think they are.
Yeah.
They legitimately think that they're hot takes and things like
that. Well, yeah. And I think the answer for that is very simple, which is that we've pretty much the liberal class in this country, kind of the people who are kind of the harbingers of, you know, what's becoming the modern Democratic Party, kind of the liberal status quo, traditional kind of whatever, that bent that's coming within quote-unquote liberals right now, they've accepted that material victories are not on the table.
Yeah.
We're not going to get single-payer health care. We're not going to get better wages. We're not going to get any of these things with the Democratic Party or with the alternative to fascism that we now feel we have to accept. So, it's all about symbolic victories now. It's all about we can't get fucking healthcare pushed through. We can't strengthen unions. We can't do any of these things. But we can make Trump mad. And we can make him fire off a tweet about how unfunny SNL is now and how they're very unfair to him.
Oh, do y'all want to talk about SNL and Trump?
Oh, man. We could talk about that for hours. Oh, I don't necessarily want to belabor the point forever. But, like, that's really what it is. The reason they legitimately believe they're doing something is because we've been resigned to this idea that that's all you can do.
Just annoy him. We're a little gnats on him at this point.
Right. Right. We can't materially challenge him in any way. We can't all get in a big group and go to the White House and protest and say we think your presidency is illegitimate. We can't elect people into Congress that actually want to fight capital at some real level and challenge it. And we can't have big systematic change. So all we can do is make people we don't like mad. Which they say is like, you want to talk about projection. That's what everyone says, like, the right wing is. Like, the far right, you know, the Trump wing is, all they care about is owning the libs, whatever. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Liberals have absolutely come full circle on that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, no. Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, I call it the Trevor Noah effect. Like,
oh, yeah.
Trevor Noah is just like, who sticks out to me as like, everything about his show is just ragging on Trump.
Trump. I was thinking Colbert is like the most cringy example. Too. Yeah. Which is a shame because he really could be very cutting and biting back in his day. Even if, you know, you admit that like maybe it wasn't, you know, a perfect leftist take or whatever. Like,
dude, but the Colbert Report in the age of Trump
might have
possibly been the only good satire against that. That really could have probably done something.
Yeah, because he had good writers that wrote good jokes. Yeah. And, like, knew how to satirize the far right in a way that, like, was funny. Yeah, and, like, you never broke character, and it worked. But, like, yeah, I don't know, man.
I miss the Colbert Report.
Yeah.
I do, too.
That was a good show. I don't necessarily miss Jon Stewart or The Daily Show in general now. Like, I remember being 14. So much better.
Yeah. I remember it fondly enough,
Remember, this is a true story, there was a writer's strike. About 10 years ago or so?
Yes, yeah. I remember the writer's strike.
Seth MacFarlane was one of the people who was out on the picket lines with the writers and, like, going full force and supporting them. And, you know, Seth MacFarlane was basically out here saying, like, if you're a host and you're a star, like, you need to be out here standing with these people, too.
Yeah,
like,
you need to halt your show's production.
He's like, you need to be out here. And apparently Jon Stewart called him in the middle of the night and said, who the fuck do you think you are? Who made you the king of comedy? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah. Oh, you know what Jon Stewart's most recent tip is? He's saying that I used to think maybe I wasn't so sure about Biden, but now that I've seen him speak at funerals, he's really good with grief, which, you know, the American people need right now. And now I think he'd be a really good president. Which, like, you know, again, you know, better political podcasts have belabored the point, but my God, is that a chilling analogy? In a way that I don't think even the guy who said it realized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the second episode of the show was about how empire's over, and we're saying a guy would be a good president of America at this stage because he's so good at giving eulogies at funerals.
Well, they were never going to get past the whole Jesse Smollett shit, so it was time to end it anyway.
Well, and I was reading this, like, article, and it was...
Jesus Christ! Wow! Wow, that took me... Wow, that was a callback.
It took a second, yeah, no,
you know what's so funny about
that? But the best part is Empire is legitimately done. The show ended.
Well, it is done, but also, like, that... So much has happened. Jesse Smollett feels like... First of all, I didn't really care that much to begin with, that it was fake or whatever, like, compared to, like, all the fucked up thing that were going on at the time. Like,
right.
You know, I just wasn't thinking... It wasn't in my purview that much one way or the other. But, like... The fact that, like, that headline feels like it was a million years ago.
Oh, no, it does. And again, as somebody...
But it was, like, what, a year and a half ago, maybe?
Yeah, I was working on...
Empire.
I work on Empire every now and then, but I was working on Chicago Med on TV. And when that shit broke, I remember they basically... There was, like, helicopters and shit outside. There was, like, press outside. And we're all just sitting here, like, he's not fucking stupid. He's not going to be here. Like, why the fuck? Because they all shoot on the same stages. Right. And then I open my phone, and they're like, yeah, he's right next door.
Oh, God.
They're like, he's right next door doing, like, a big apology. And it was a really surreal feeling to be like, the biggest news story in the country is, like, literally 50 feet away from
That's got to be weird.
Like, I can't see him, but he's 50 feet away
from That's really weird.
And, dude, after that shit, security, it's a film lot. There were times where I'm like, this is a film lot. Y'all need to, like, lock this down a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But after that, they got...
Oh, I'm sure.
Dude, oh my God.
That's wild. You know, it's funny, just going back to the writer's strike, one of the first people I remember, you want to talk about just interesting things that make me go, now, the first person I remember saying, fuck it, we're coming back with or without writers, was Ellen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
You want to talk about somebody who's really fallen from grace recently.
Yeah.
In every way. That was horrifying. And I feel like that is actually a great segue into the second half of the episode here.
Yeah.
That kind of Ron wants to lead.
Oh, yeah.
I really do need to preface this by saying we're having a nuanced discussion about kind of cancel culture and when it's effective, when it's okay to hold people accountable, or when it is an acceptable thing to evoke. We are not the be-all, end-all on this discussion. We will provide the most nuanced kind of takes we can. But at the end of the day, we are not saying that nobody deserves to ever be held accountable for what they do, or that there aren't horrible people that the internet mob should be allowed to rip apart,
right.
Or that that we are, like I said, the ultimate voice of everything that has considered all points on this subject. It's merely, like, our opinions, and I just wanted to get that out of the way before we said anything else.
Yeah. But it's just, I don't know. It's this idea of, you know, Ellen's a great example.
Yeah.
Did you hear this fucking batshit insane thing that, yeah, like, some podcast host was like, Joe Rogan got that crazy Spotify deal.
Oh, yeah,
all that,
yeah,
money for the podcast.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is why they're coming after Ellen, because they want to go after Joe Rogan, because he's going against the establishment. So he has a show, so they're just going after people with shows. So that's just...
Right.
Mull that in your brain. Roll Hell that yeah, around dude. For a little bit.
That would be so fucking crazy, yeah, if that was true.
Oh, my God.
That would be wild, but man.
As somebody who has been in the entertainment industry for a while, has had my kind of, like, peaks behind the curtain every, yeah, now and then, and you just get in circles and you know things... I was reading shit about this Ellen stuff back in 2012,
yeah,
on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
The shit about...
Yeah, I knew about this probably 5 years ago anyway.
Oh, yeah. The shit about Louis C.K.
Yeah.
As a comedian, and I mean, not even like a famous, yeah, or whatever comedian. I knew all about that shit.
Oh, yeah.
The shit with T.J. Miller, especially being a comedian out in Chicago.
Yeah.
I knew all about that shit.
Oh,
like,
sure.
I knew plenty of people with plenty of stories about him. So it's one of these weird things when you talk about shit like Weinstein and you say stuff like, oh, they knew. Trust me, I'm nobody, and I knew.
Right.
You know what I mean? It just gets around. But I think, Ellen, this is a good example of, this is obviously somebody, I mean, it's not like physical or sexual abuse, obviously, that's a given.
Well,
but it's still,
there is some, apparently.
Oh, is there really?
Well, with not with Ellen, but with her producers and,
oh,
stuff,
shit,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. But even just, let's just say for the framework, Ellen, you know,
yeah,
that's not,
yeah,
you know,
specifically Ellen DeGeneres,
right,
the person.
You, sure, know, there's no sexual abuse or violence,
yeah,
or anything,
yeah,
like that.
She's not raping people.
But
no,
it's,
no, no,
still somebody in a position of power who,
yeah,
is abusing that position.
Yeah, and abusing a lot of people using that position.
Right. I mean, if this was any other boss at any other company,
mm-hmm,
yeah, somebody would can you. But this is the weird thing behind Hollywood, and why this is the reason that actors get paid so much,
mm-hmm,
and the reason that, like, again, even somebody like me who's not famous,
right,
when I would land a part, I would be on set, and they're like kissing the feet, the ground that I walk on, and,
mm-hmm,
it's like, why? And the reason is, if that one person, that one actor or whatever, says, "Fuck it, I'm out of here," the entire operation is derailed.
Yeah.
Literally, millions of dollars go out because just even just one bit player says, I'm out. You have to shut everything down,
mm-hmm,
figure out how to cast. So it's this weird thing of, like, I think this gets into a bigger point of maybe we kind of need to demolish the idea of celebrity.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Like,
for sure. And you're right. Where it's like, it may have been easier to, like, shine the light on somebody who's, like, you know, powerful, but, like, maybe not a public figure.
Right.
The problem when you get into, like, who the boss is sometimes in Hollywood is they're a frontward-facing person. So it's, like, it's gonna be this, like, national fucking story and this whole big crazy nightmare anytime, for, like, PR or whatever, anytime, like, you have to can somebody.
Yeah. I still think my favorite, I got a role a while back and they got me mic'd up and they put on my makeup, I'm in costume, and they're walking me down the hall to where we're shooting,
mm-hmm,
and I swear to God, this is totally true. The assistant director got on his walkie and said, "Clear the hallway, talent walking, clear the hallway, talent walking," and I'm just like,
what?
I can walk down a fucking hallway, dude.
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong with you?
Jeez.
Yeah, that's just how this whole industry operates.
Silence and complacence, and everybody's afraid for their job all the time. And,
mm-hmm,
you know what? I would say in a lot of ways, like, that was kind of the crazy thing with the writer's strike. It's kind of amazing that, like, people in this industry where you're always scrapping for jobs and you're always, like, you know, so worried, they were able to, like, get together as a union and have this organized action.
Yeah. And there's the unions still have a very big stronghold,
mm-hmm,
in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. But, like, what was your point about, like, when cancel culture is used in bad faith and stuff? I'd really like to jump into that.
Well, yeah, and that was a bigger point. We talk about, you come to find that a lot of the times, the most people who tend to rail the hardest against cancel culture or even say it doesn't exist or whatever, that kind,
yeah,
of hemisphere, are usually the first people to enact it and take advantage of it the second it can be of the benefit to them.
To them.
Perfect example is, and it's a lot of the right, and it's a lot of the alt-right. Perfect example, we were talking about this, is the James Gunn shit.
Yeah.
James Gunn made some edgy jokes on Twitter like 10 years ago. They pulled him up and he gets fired.
Immediately.
And do you know why that shit was pulled up? Because he was critical of Trump.
Yeah.
The Mike Cernovich and the fucking alt-right, like, dug all this shit up.
Yeah, the most evil fucking people.
Right. So these people who do nothing but rail against it,
right,
the second it can be used to their advantage, they're
right,
and they're all for it.
Right. And it becomes a question of, like, where do you draw the line between, like, yes, we need to hold people accountable for their actions, and, like,
we are just now kowtowing to what the worst people in the fucking world want because we have to obey. We can't admit that anybody could ever do anything in bad faith. And that becomes complicated. That's where it gets really murky, I think, if you guys want to jump in on that.
I think going back to what Ron was saying a minute ago where he's talking about people, you know, kissing ass on the set, where I thought he was going with this was, in particular to Ellen, was we got to, you know, you see how up people in television and media can get now. Like Ellen, she, you know, she's friends with George Bush. She can establish a, you know, political career. I thought you were going to say something like, kissing ass so, you know, they don't have, you know, they're never retaliated against, or maybe to just kind of ride the tail coast in on something else.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, that's the thing. People in the industry out in New York and L.A., you never give your opinion on anything. Did you see that movie? Did you not like it? Don't say anything, because who knows who's in this fucking room who worked on it?
Yeah. Right.
Kind of thing. You know what I mean?
That's very weird and restrictive.
Oh, yeah. No, it's, I mean, the entire industry is just walking on fucking eggshells.
Yeah.
Which is like, fuck it. Why do we even do this? Let's just get drunk in Cincinnati and watch Highlander 2.
Hell yeah, dude.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it's way more fun.
Yeah.
But I think that points to something really interesting about like the way that cancel culture came about. It came up out of that Hollywood eggshell walking culture, right? And it was like we finally have Twitter. We have this like vehicle where we can all get these like little armies of people behind us,
right?
And we can launch cyber attacks at each other and cancel each other over like, oh well, I heard them say that they said this, and you know, they got caught on the hype hot mic saying this. And again, like, it's not about people not being held accountable for their actions, but rather that people somehow think that being Twitter canceled is being held accountable.
Right.
Right.
You know, and like, yes, people in Hollywood and especially do lose their jobs over being Twitter canceled.
Right.
Not that they don't. And there have been some notable examples where some really big pieces of shit have gotten what they deserved.
Absolutely.
Right.
Of the Twitter mob. But people, you know, 150, 200 years ago would form actual mobs and go to actual rich people's houses and string them up upside down until they gave them what they want.
Oh, yeah.
And now, instead of that, we have Twitter, where we can feel as though we've participated in one of those mobs and really stuck it to the rich people in Hollywood.
Right.
But in fact, we've done nothing.
Right, right. And it's one of those things where, like, look, man, if what James Gunn said in those jokes is so personally fucking offensive and repugnant to you that you can't fuck with the dude's movies, you think he should be whatever, I'm probably not going to convince you that's not the case.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying like anybody should feel any particular way about the jokes or like whatever, but like at some point we do have to acknowledge that like very sinister forces are going to use this shit in bad faith, and that like we do need to figure out as a society kind of the nuances and where the line is here. Because what I'm kind of fearful of now, and you know, I've kind of seen this, is like when everybody is under the gun all the time, the people who just can't handle that and like can't live their lives in the Twitter sphere start to tune it out. So then all of a sudden when it's like, oh my God, this person is shitty and they're raping people and they're abusing people and they're treating their people who work for them like shit or like coercing them, and suddenly it's like, it just feels like people are just going to write it off as like, oh, it's just another Twitter mob.
Yeah.
And it's like, I really think that, like, you know, like you said, some pieces should have gotten what they deserved. And I do think that, like, in a state that we've accepted, like, the courts aren't here to protect us when Mitch McConnell's putting all these people on the court benches.
Right.
The idea that people can get some justice where really fucked up, awful people, like, just can't live in a way where like they're not held accountable for that, I don't think that's a bad thing always, but we have to be aware that like, yeah, we can't. People will stop listening if we just are on high alert all the time about everything and have no nuance, I guess.
Right.
Well, and I think you can't call wolf.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And you know, I hate saying things like cry wolf, because like, it's some patronizing to, oh, it's just fucking babies crying wolf because they don't have healthcare or whatever, you know.
Right.
You hear cry wolf all the time to, like, write off people's concerns. But, like, I think there is something to be said for, like, if you are just, if you are treating a 10-year-old, you know, joke the same way you are treating, like, an active rapist,
mm-hmm.
people are going to, they're not going to treat them both this, it's going to go the wrong way from the way you think it's going to go. They're going to stop caring about both.
Right.
And that sucks, and I don't want to get to that point. Certainly. Jack, what was your point?
I think that it's there was a really interesting example that came up. It was a couple months back. But Silvia Federici, who's like the foremost Marxist feminist scholar in a generation, and her work is incredible.
Nice.
And she was canceled by Twitter libs over the new book that she just dropped, because her whole study as a feminist Marxist scholar is like to go back and look at like the history of sexuality and the way that capitalism has kind of restricted women's sexuality because you need to create bodies for capitalism to continue to expand. Like, that was one of her major contributions, and the patriarchy of the wage and all that.
Sure.
But in her newest book, she discusses like trans and LGBTQ people in a very academic context and kind of traces like the lineage of like gay people throughout history and like the different ways that they've been treated by different economic systems, and why is it that under capitalism, like, this really harsh crackdown came in the 19th century against gay people and against like gay expression.
Right.
And like, what's the deal? So she like kind of susses that all out in her book. But in order to have a conversation about something like that, that really is about the persecution of a group of people that have historically faced just massive amounts of injustice, you have to say some uncomfortable things, and you have to make some uncomfortable points that people are initially not going to really like you for saying.
Right.
And in order to do a thorough academic analysis of those issues in the way that she does, the Twitter libs just like latched on to one thing that she had said out of context about trans people and were just like, she's a TERF.
Yeah.
Can't get her. And I'm just like, guys, if you have read any of Silvia Federici's books, like, she is the furthest thing from a fucking TERF.
That is an excellent segue into kind of the point I wanted to make, where it's like, okay, so not only will like right wingers and the alt right and whatever use cancel culture or whatever to like go after people who are critical of Trump, they will also do it in ways politically that actively hurt you. How much do you guys know about the Alex Morse situation in Massachusetts? I would love to fill you in on this, because I think it's a really good example of like the worst faith being used by the worst people in the worst way. So there's this young man, I think he's like 31, in Massachusetts named Alex Morse, and he is running for the House of Representatives against a very corporate centrist type in Western Massachusetts. So a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a month ago now, this statement comes out from the College Dems of Massachusetts that are like basically disinviting him to all future events. And what they pretty much imply is that like he made some people sexually uncomfortable in the past, or like at college campuses and other things, and like they just can't endorse that. And everybody freaked out, and he lost all these endorsements and shit. Well, then I believe it was the Dispatch wrote an article where they had leaked text messages where they pretty much found out that the College Dems had been working with like the state party to put a hit out on this guy. And what they pretty much came down to was, he's a gay man, and if we can prove at any point in like the last year or two, he has had, while he was mayor, he has gone on dates with anybody, had consensual sex with anybody, we are, even if, whatever, we are going to imply heavily, without any real substantiated proof, that he used his position to coerce those people. Now, what they actually found out when they did research was, one guy he like went on a date with and slept with didn't even know he was the mayor. So like, you know, that classic abuse of power where you forget to do it, right? So pretty much they find out that like all of these like young Dem interns played up this horrific homophobic stereotype that gay men are predatory in order to be some centerist corporate shithead's coffee boy.
Yeah.
So we don't even have to talk about the alt-right using cancel culture in the worst way possible. We are talking about supposed liberals and progressives using it to invoke horrific old stereotypes about gay men.
For personal gain.
To fuck us over.
Yeah.
So we never get good health care. So we never get a higher wage. So people with Alex Morse's politics stay out of politics. Mm. So that's where it even gets scarier. That's the next logical elevation.
So there was something actually recently, and like the last few days we could talk about. I have two Netflix things that I can bring up.
Yeah.
I don't know if you all are aware, but the big Netflix thing recently is over a movie called Cuties.
Yeah.
If you are familiar. For those of you who don't know, it is a French film about an 11-year-old girl Lives in France, has very strict religious Muslim parents.
Right, she's from Somalia, right?
Falls in love with this local, like, dance crew of local girls and discovers dance, which obviously interferes with her parents. Blah, 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 blah. Netflix, like, you know, put this poster out that just made them look like they were at, like, a child beauty pageant kind of thing. And it made it seem like this big child beauty pageant, like, exploitative kind of shit. People lost their minds, and they're like, Netflix, yeah, you have 11-year-olds twerking, and da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is really weird. So I watched the trailer, right, and I watched the trailer, and I was like, this doesn't actually, I'm not getting those kind of vibes.
Yeah, from, it's not like, it's not like saying, like, sexualizing, right, young girls is cool and good.
Well, actually, on the flip side, I do some more research on it. Turns out it is a French film written by a black Muslim French woman, and it's basically pretty autobiographical of her, yep, growing up, falling in love with dance, da-da-da-da-da. And here's the plot twist.
Yeah.
The whole point of the movie is it is a take on the over-sexualization of children. It's her getting involved.
Oh, God. So it's, yeah, actually, like, against the thing, yes, that people were concerned, right, about.
It's, wow, her getting involved with this and getting caught up in that and being kind of like, yeah, maybe this is too much. So here's the thing.
Yeah.
The people who freaked out backtrack. Yeah. They're like, well, Netflix, you marketed this poorly. Netflix, yeah, you marketed this poorly. Yes, you're not wrong. Mm. But here's the thing. You weren't mad at the marketing. You were mad at the movie.
Yeah.
So if you were mad at that movie, you still have to be mad at this movie. Or can you not just admit that you're not an adult who can take 2 fucking seconds to Google something, right, and now you have to blame a copywriter at Netflix?
Right.
Because you can't, like, literally do look for yourself.
Basic amount you can't take the time to go back and say, oh, you know what? I fucked up. I was, yeah, wrong. Right. I did some research. It turns out I was incorrect.
Right. You have to tank a black woman's career.
Right. Yeah. No, and they were literally being like, cancel your Netflix subscription. Da, 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 da. And it's like, just take the time. And then
that would be like if Inconvenient Truth, somebody had like a clip from Inconvenient Truth about war being like, global warming's a thing.
Right.
And then everybody went, Al Gore is pro-global warming.
Yeah.
Because when like literally the point of the movie was against it, you know?
Well, and there's a film, Good Time. I don't know if anybody's seen
it. It's one of my favorite films.
With Josh and Benny Safdie. The Safdie brothers wrote and directed Uncut Gems. This is, yeah, the movie they did before that.
With Robert Pattinson. Future Batman in the main, yeah, role. It's amazing.
Fuck. Let's fucking go.
Dude, that's literally, I'm looking to buy a poster for that movie for my office. It's so good. It's so good.
But in
good,
the movie.
Watch Good Time.
He plays just a scumbag New York criminal type.
Yes. I would love to do an episode.
Yeah.
Ago,
just total. Time, by the way. Just total, like, Queens.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Just Queens scumbags. Yeah. Like, crime.
Greek dude. Guy from Queens.
Yeah. And there's a part where he's hiding out after a bank robbery, and he hides out in this house, and there's a 16-year-old there who he's talking to. And while he's sitting there just watching TV with the 16-year-old, his face comes up on the TV, being like, this man's wanted. He freaks out, and to keep her from seeing it, starts making out with her, the 16-year-old. Yeah. And I was watching that with somebody.
And then starts, like, sexually manipulating her to do stuff, right, for him. And
then the second they get on the bed and start making out, the dude upstairs wakes up. But that's spoilers.
Yeah.
But I was watching that with somebody, and they're like, oh, I don't like that. And I was like, well, yeah, you're not supposed to.
Yeah, he's the biggest piece of shit, right, in the world. Like, that's the point.
I'm like, that's the whole. I'm like, you're not supposed to like. And this is a weird thing that I can think overall. It's this weird, you're supposed to feel an array of emotions with art, and part of that should be anger. Part of that should be disgust.
I got a point, yeah, for part, this. I want to jump in, yeah, when you're done.
It's just like, you are not supposed to feel good 24/7. And again, art, there's a lot of art that is. That's the whole point.
Yeah, I feel
but
good.
Yes, you are supposed to see things in art that feel, as long as they're not glamorizing these,
yeah,
things.
Yeah, that they're gross and bad. Right. Yeah.
But like, if they are, yes, it's like, we need to portray these real things that happen in real life in our art.
Yeah.
Just don't glamorize it. So there's this whole thing. And then this whole ideal, you'll see people like, if you're not making me happy, I'm cutting you out of my life. And it's like, oh yeah, because that's what everybody else is for. Everybody else exists just to make you happy 24/7.
Right.
That's not how the fucking world works.
Right, it's so fucking trite. What was, yeah, your point, John?
So, kind of going off of that, that the movie's supposed to make you feel conflicted. You're supposed to feel an array of emotions, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how much you guys follow the Last of Us 2 just came out in June.
I've heard all the kind, okay, of hubbaloo, yeah.
So, fans are just like outraged. They're like, it's a horrible game. It's a waste of my time. It's so long, and it's just, yeah, garbage. It's garbage characters. I can't believe they did it this way. And I go through and I play it, and yes, I get to, you know, it's a very long game. It took me like 30 hours to beat it. Definitely, and I got it as a birthday gift, so I'm like, first of all, I can't complain that I wasted my money or the person that bought it for me wasted, yeah, their money, because I just had a great time playing through it. And even at the end, I didn't know how to feel.
Yeah.
And I immediately understood that that was the whole point of the game, because it takes place, if you're not familiar with The Last of Us, it's a game that takes place in, you know, 20 years post-apocalypse. There's zombies, and they're not traditionally, you know, how you see them in media.
Right.
But it's really cool to see how it all plays out. Basically, the whole message is there's no good guys. There's no bad guys. People do shitty shit to survive, but also that has a good commentary on today, too. It's like, you know, we live under, you know, this failing capitalistic system. And
yeah, that pits us all against each other.
Right, exactly. And, like, you know, you can't criticize somebody who's trying to do, you know, like, I don't like necessarily like a lot of the shit that I see in the financial sector or somebody that works there. But, you know, I feel like I can help people by, you know, educating them well on finances and credit as part of my job, is something I'm licensed
right.
to do.
Yeah.
But basically my point is, like, you know, I might see that I'm helping myself or I'm helping people do that, but, you know, sometimes when I'm not able to help somebody, that person sees me as a bad guy.
Right.
Well, maybe I am to them. Maybe I'm really not. I mess this person.
You are the embodiment
so
of a systematic issue.
No. Yes.
In that moment.
Exactly.
I feel the same way even as a government employee sometimes. That, like, I'm not a piece of shit who doesn't care about you and doesn't want to help you, but sometimes I can't for whatever reason. Sometimes good reasons, like, I just can't give you what you want because there are rules, but
yeah.
Like...
Sorry, breaking news. Beep, 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 beep. Got a Twitter notification. This is amazing. You all have to, please.
Oh, God, yes, please.
Twitter news. Majority of Republicans believe the number of COVID-19 deaths is acceptable, CBS poll finds.
Well, pack it in, folks.
Yeah.
The virus is over.
Thanks for joining. Thanks for existing.
What did we say?
Remain
in
indoors
episode.
Forever.
Yeah.
It's coming. They're going to say it's a good thing.
Yeah. Yep. They're going to, well, first it's going to go, fuck it, we're open, like Ron said.
Right.
It's going to go, yep, it's done, we're good. And then, yeah, it's going to be, actually, you know, look, not as many people competing for jobs now. Remember all those boomers that wouldn't retire? They're dead. You can have their jobs. Isn't that good? Oh, no, we're not going to pay you as much as we paid them or give you the same benefits. Isn't that so good that all those people are dead and you can have their jobs? You little baby, baby.
You know, it's a great point you were saying about the whole kind of like there's no good guys. A movie like Parasite, I think there's this
yes.
whole debate. Like, who's in the right? Is it the family? Is
yeah.
it the rich people?
We and talked a little bit about
yeah.
Sam Piercer last episode.
And
yeah.
it's like, I feel like my
also Bong Joon-ho.
I feel like my takeaway from it was like, well, they're both kind of in the wrong. I think the point was that capitalism makes parasites of all of us.
Yes.
Yes, that's... there's a really great part of that movie where they talk about, like, how nice the woman is that has
yeah.
hired them. And the mom pretty much goes, yeah, it's easy to be nice when you're rich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if that's the exact line I'm paraphrasing, but, like, I think about that all the time. Where it's like, it is easy to be nice when you don't have a care in the fucking world. You don't have to worry about where are your kids going to be able to eat
yeah.
or clothe themselves. You know, a huge percentage of this country, I think like a third to like close to half of the people in this country can't cover a $400 emergency.
Yeah.
So yeah, people are going to lie and cheat and steal to fucking survive.
Yeah.
And they're going to try to screw with the people who are screwing with them.
Yeah.
And the whole system, and at the end, what I always appreciate about Bong Joon-ho movies, nobody fucking wins.
Yeah.
Nobody fucking
nobody
wins
ever, yeah.
at the end of Parasite. Nobody fucking wins at the end of Snowpiercer. And that's always been my argument. That's kind of my thesis with, like, why white people should support, like, anti-police brutality and Black Lives Matter, even if they don't, like, see it as their issue for whatever reason. It still affects them. Cops can shoot your kids and probably get away with it with qualified immunity.
Oh, yeah.
So it is disproportionately affecting black people, to be sure.
Yeah.
But nobody fucking wins when the armed wing of the state can just kill anybody with no repercussions.
Yeah. Yep.
And capitalism is the same thing. At the end of the fucking day, the rich are sociopaths and the poor are dying and nobody's happy.
Right, but like the whole like putting out pieces of art that just kind of muddy the waters and say, oh, well, everybody's bad under capitalism and since we're all bad, then
that's
we're
true.
All just fucked, so just throw it away.
Right.
It's like, no, there are evil people in the world.
Who do evil things.
Who
right.
do evil things. And it's like the whole like the cuties thing brought up to me, the whole like... like the right wing conspiracy theory about like the pedophiles ruling the world and,
yeah,
and all
yeah.
that, you know. I think that it's really interesting to see the way that they're putting out these pieces of media that are kind of just saying like, oh yeah, well, I mean, everybody's bad. Like, well, we're all bad. You're bad. I'm bad. Everybody's bad. So
yeah.
like, but in the same breath, like they are saying that these pieces of art
right.
don't carry the same message. I don't know if that's like...
Right, and that, I think what is great about Bong Joon-ho's movie, we should probably just do a whole episode about Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah. That's, I mean, if you want to talk class-conscious cinema,
It's not necessarily that, like, always, like, even if you think they may have been in the wrong in some ways or whatever, like, I still think he very much portrays the people getting fucked over very sympathetically.
Oh, well, yeah.
And he still makes you feel like, okay, yeah, they're getting... But, like, my God... when the shit water comes in from outside during the storm, or they're in the back of the car, the train car, getting, you know, getting their arms amputated because they crossed, like, the hierarchy or whatever. Like, even if they do fucked up things, and they do, like, you always do feel somewhat sympathetic for them.
Oh, well, still. Yeah. No, yeah. God, I love Snowpiercer.
Yeah, it's such a great fucking movie.
Dude, and that honestly, scene when they're, like, he's ahead of them and he's in the back of the train... and they just start blasting at each other through the windows. They both take one last shot, and both their bullets land, like, right next to each other.
It's phenomenal.
Dude. Dude. Every time.
It is so good. So we're getting to about 50 minutes here. Does anybody have any closing remarks on the topic? I feel like I kind of hit mine with, like, the nobody wins under capitalism thing, so.
Well, we were talking about the cancel culture thing and, you know, Jussie Smollett. I think one example that we're watching play out right now is the Dan Harmon video that
recircled. And we've already been through this. Yeah. He tried to get canceled for this like 3 years ago.
And again, to reiterate my point, like if that genuinely fucking horrifies you and you say fuck Dan Harmon, like I'm not going to convince you
don't watch Rick and Morty.
Right. Or like whatever and like you know say fuck Dan Harmon or whatever, but like again, it's being evoked by people who don't have your best interest in mind in many cases.
Right.
So just consider that at the very least.
Right. Or you could just watch Rick and Morty. I think it comes down to when you talk about cancel culture is you need to look at a situation. You need to have nuance.
Right.
You need to look at the severity of it. You need to look at the person's response to it.
Right.
And you need to look at it as something as, does this person deserve to have their, like, income and health insurance lost over this? Am I wrong? There's a lot of people who do.
Sure.
And there's a lot of people who should. It's a lot of them are in power.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, you talk about the James Gunn... the Dan Harmon.
Right.
It's like, does Dan Harmon and James Gunn both deserve to have their income completely squandered, their future in the industry completely squandered over something that they have acknowledged as in poor taste and apologized for? And again, at the end of the day, they were edgy jokes.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Right.
Literally nobody got hurt.
A serial rapist is literally president right now.
Yeah. Like, I mean, again, it's...
You know, and I don't want to... Again, I don't want to belittle anything that's beneath that horrifying thing necessarily, but, like, it's... Yeah, it's one of those things you do have to consider in all of this is that, like, yeah, bad people are going to try to con you, dude, and you need to be ready for it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And, like, in general...
Yeah.
Cancel culture is deferring... to the power of the bosses to fire people from their jobs for any reason,
right?
Whether it's founded or not,
right?
And that's the big problem.
It's still an appeal to capitalist authority in like a really fucked up way.
I think your friend, or I guess our friend, he goes by Chaz on Facebook.
Yes.
Yeah, talks about how there was an example at his work where they were him and another coworker got somebody fired for being a complete shithead, but. You know,
racist,
but using you know other examples to kind of lump that in together with that, and yes, like it, like not only was he a shitty person, and just like fucking them over at work too.
Yeah, he was actively harming people.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But instead of building community structures to deal with people who are actively harming people and actually stopping it from happening and changing the system so that those things are not able to go on for so fucking long before somebody finally breaks the story.
Right.
Right? Like, oh, no, don't do that. Just tell on people to their bosses.
Very uncomfortable thing, but I mean, it is a question. Maybe if I'm wrong here... you can tell me in the comments to go fuck yourself, Tim. I mean, that is fine. But, like, what is the point of somebody like Harvey Weinstein going to prison in so many cases? And I'm not saying he shouldn't have or whatever. Like, fuck that guy. But, like, you could make the point, theoretically. Like, what's the point of somebody like that going to prison if he's just going to be replaced with somebody who's going to do the exact same thing?
Right.
He's going to abuse his power. He's, you know, like, I don't think anybody is under the illusion that, like, sexual assault is over in Hollywood now because of the Me Too movement. Yeah. And casting couch situations are over in Hollywood because at the end of the day, knocking the top layer off without changing that. I mean, we talked about this in our when we talked about fucking slavery and chattel slavery, if you want to go that far back.
That's what Colin always says when Weinstein shit hit. He's like, well, thank God we took out the one rapist in Hollywood.
Right. And it's like, if the fucking hierarchy is not going to change, and the way people can build these structures to, like, deal with these things in a way that really holds people accountable and, like, gives community some say in the process... It's just a hydra where three more heads are going to pop up.
Yeah. That's it.
That's it, man. I think that's it.
Show Capitalism business is stupid.
Yeah, but you should see Snowpiercer.
You should see Snowpiercer.
We are the number one.
It's the only good movie.
Good time. It's not a bad time. It's not a good time. It's a mid time.
Yeah. It's a mid time.
Mid time, and you're just smoking shitty weed when you're 16.
Yeah, we're proud. We're proud to be Southwest Ohio's number one Bong Joon-ho podcast now. I think that's really the point of this podcast. And thank you all so much for listening. We've been Tim, Jack, John, and Ron, and we hope to see you next time. Because on our honor, we will do our best to smash capitalism. Thank you.